Hello and welcome to Connections. I'm Bill Newell along with Rick Moore. And Rick, we've made it to the end of the week. It's Friday.
I know. Another week down, middle of May. We're moving right along.
Well, May 8th, I mean, I'm not a, you know, I'm not a mathematician like you, but, you know, I don't know if the 8th makes the middle of the month, but we're approaching the middle of the month. But let's not get hung up on
It's only the 8th?
Yeah, it's the 8th, Rick.
Okay.
And it's Friday morning, the
8th. Second week of May, so we're moving right along.
Yeah, there you go, second week.
I know.
Getting a little giddy here, all right. And again, you're the rounding expert. That's fine. I got it. And maybe it does work out. It might work out about right. Who knows?
But well, I'm just trying to get to the 18th as quickly as possible, I guess.
The 18th?
Isn't that when stuff is supposed to reopen?
Oh yeah. Okay. So we got our golf courses open yesterday in some areas, and maybe the ones that didn't open up will be opening up very soon, but we got the green light on that. Hey, Rick, quickly, what do we have for guests coming up today?
Well, Bill Kirk is going to talk about the anxiety for reopening restaurants up in Andover in the Merrimack Valley, among other things. He's our eagle eye on the Merrimack Valley, and he gives us a COVID-19 update. Also talking with Dr. Christine McGrath. She's the Director of Operations for the Massachusetts Association of School Superintendents, an absolutely tireless worker, and she'll update us as to what the superintendents across the state are facing.
Also coming up, Rick, what do we have next week? We've got a couple of notes. Got a few people already booked for next week.
Yeah, well, looking good next week. We'll be talking with the Gloucester mayor. Haven't chatted with Mayor Safathia Romeo Taken in a while. Going to be checking in with Salem Mayor Kim Driscoll, as we do once a month. And also we'll be talking with a Winthrop Police Sergeant, Sarko Jajarian, who is a member of a PARI-like organization with the police force. He's promoting it, and I believe he's heading it. It's called CLEAR. And some interesting initiatives sponsored by the Winthrop Police Department.
All right, so we've got a lot of great things, that and a whole lot more all coming up next week on Connections. Again, check out Connections weekdays at 10 a.m. And, of course, North Shore Sports Night, Monday night at 7. And our North Shore Today post, which features a daily news podcast. Check on the weather, some local photos. Today we have some photos from the Gannon Golf Course as they were out golfing yesterday for day one of golf. And, of course, our videos of the day as well. So all that just ahead here on Connections.
Well, it's my great pleasure to bring back Dr. Christine McGrath, Director of Operations for the Massachusetts Association of School Superintendents, and not a stranger to MSO, not a stranger to anybody on Cape Ann, or in fact, the whole North Shore. So, Dr. McGrath, first of all, let's start off by asking you, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. We're very busy. Our mission is to provide support to our members, and during these challenging times in uncharted waters, there's a lot of support that's needed, and we're happy to respond to that need.
Well, what is your role in terms of being the Director of Operations, and maybe what kind of communications are you having with our area superintendents? Because I'm guessing that the Association of School Superintendents for Massachusetts is a pretty big organization.
Yes. A lot of my duties and responsibilities associated with Director of Operations revolve around member support. So right now, I am providing support to members in the following way. Through our organization, I serve as a coach in our new superintendent induction program. So we meet right now remotely with first and second year superintendents on a regular basis to continue to drive the curriculum of that program. Our organization statewide is divided into 9 round tables. So North Shore has a round table, Merrimack Valley, Berkshire County, 8 round tables across the Commonwealth, plus an urban superintendent's round table. So I have been meeting, as those round tables convene, I have been meeting with the round tables and updating them on the state information as I have it, bringing back the concerns from that roundtable to our team at MASF. And I think what's been most rewarding is, for example, last Friday I met with the North Shore roundtable, and one of the topics of conversation for them was graduation. So I was then able to compile what I got from the notes from that meeting and to send those notes off to the superintendent, who is the president of the Merrimack Valley Superintendents Roundtable. And I said to him, Mike, I know you're taking this up with your members here. You might want to have the benefit of what North Shore is thinking about, talking about. So it's supporting them through the new superintendent's induction program by attending the roundtable meetings and attending the following meetings through the state each week. We have a superintendent's only call where the commissioner meets with superintendents and updates them on things like changes in the MCAS, the competency determination required for graduation, the new remote learning expectations. Then I'm on a meeting with Jay Sullivan and the finance people from DESE where we're talking about transportation reimbursement, out-of-district placement costs, what the elements of a 1/12th budget might look like. We have met with him around exclusively transportation. We've met with him about unique finance features associated with regional schools. And now Jay is to a point where he has been, he and his team have been convening weekly calls on really what's on your mind, what are your concerns. And that's primarily attended by school business managers. And third, I attend the weekly meeting by Senior Associate Commissioner Russell Johnston, and that focuses exclusively on special ed and compensatory strategies, virtual IEP meetings. I mean, you and I have done that work together, so we're very familiar with that. So supporting our members around this is what's happening in the state, this is what your colleagues are doing, and going back to our team and saying this is what's on the minds of new superintendents, roundtable members, and this is what I think our members should be you know, looking out for.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. McGrath, but didn't you retire as superintendent a few years ago?
I've actually flunked retirement, Rick, but I was retired for 7 days.
Okay. You flunked retirement, that's for sure. Oh, my goodness. Let me ask you, with respect to what's going on now, does the DESE solicit advice from the Superintendents Association?
Absolutely. Commissioner Riley is great. In fact, the commissioner recently convened, and they had their first meeting today, convened a group of educators, a group of people representing the Superintendents Association, School Committee Association, both of the main teacher unions. There are 23 people in total on the group. And the theme of that is best thinking around return and recovery. Mm-hmm. What is it going to take? Mm. When the commissioner first published the guidelines for remote learning, he got a group of us together in a room and said, here's what I'm thinking, give me your feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, he's very been very responsive.
You know, for you to say that, it sounds to me like that there's some respect there from your association in that regard. And that's reassuring, I think, as a taxpayer, as a citizen, as a, and as a parent. That's great to hear. Dr. McGrath, across the spectrum, the superintendents represent so many different aspects of community life in the area. The problems that they're facing, is there a commonality among all of them, you know, across the state?
Yes, not only is there a commonality, Rick, but there's been what I would call a sequence to their concerns that they have all shared. First was the challenge of taking your face-to-face brick-and-mortar process and moving it online.
Mm-hmm.
So that was phase one. So I'm going to talk about the common, and then I'm going to talk about the equity gaps across our Commonwealth. So how do I get up and running on remote learning? That was first and foremost. How do I make sure that I'm feeding my kids? How do I make sure that all of my families have a device so a child can participate in a remote learning? Many of them scrambled. Some were further ahead than others. So by the first 2 weeks of this, everybody was up and running with remote learning. The second phase was figuring out how do you make sure everybody's engaged and what's the criteria for assessing, adding value to the work that the children are doing. Phase three, so the commissioner initially said, you can take what you've taught thus far and go deeper into that curriculum taught to date. Phase three was more, no, we want you to go, now that we're going to be closed through the end of this academic year, we want you to take what you've taught, we want you to align that, what the commissioner has called essential standards in the curriculum, and we want you to advance the work according to, not everything, because you can't recreate it all, but according to those power standards. So that became a concern. I would say the three things that are foremost on their minds right now, one, because it's a loyalty to the legacy of their respective school districts. What am I going to do to culminate those wonderful celebratory activities we had for eighth graders, for children who are graduating? This is Teacher Appreciation Week. Teacher, congratulations, Rick. What are we going to do to celebrate? This is important to our seniors. This is important to our community. So that doesn't sound like a thing that's as huge as other issues, but that's important to the community. That's important to the students. So that's piece one that they're worried about. Piece two is fiscal. How do I land fiscal 20? How do I plan for fiscal 21? And in anticipation of appreciably reduced state revenues, what's the impact of fiscal 22? So they're concerned about that. And to that end, we're working with the Mass Association of School Business Officials, and we're providing a technical assistance program for our members and for their members next week to look at, these are the things you have to keep your eye on with respect to state aid, circuit breaker, Student Opportunity Act. So graduation, celebratory, culture, positive culture things, number one. Finance is going to be huge, particularly as the state numbers come in, the House Ways and Means budget, the Senate, the joint, and then third is return and recovery and what that will look like.
I can't imagine the hours you guys are putting in, Dr. McGrath. This is mind-blowing. And a question that comes to mind listening to all of this is, do you have a conduit to other states' superintendents in terms of, because everything is on hold right now, obviously, and you're trying to, it seems to me we're all just trying to get our heads above the water and not sink. And so all of these things you just mentioned are in the works. But again, across the country, everybody is in the same situation. And then you combine that with national requirements and so on. So is there an interstate communication type thing that you would be involved in also?
We would not be involved in it, but Dr. Thomas Scott, our executive director, meets with the other executive directors from across the country.
Okay.
So our job as his team is to make sure that we have provided him with the information that we're picking up in the field, the patterns, the trends, so that when he takes his place remotely with the other executive association executive directors, he can share. Now you take it to the chief state officers. Certainly Commissioner Riley meets with his peers from across the country. Governor Baker often makes reference in his daily press briefing to his conversations with groups of other governors. We know that Governor Baker and Governor Cuomo and other governors in our region came together in sort of a coalition to rely upon each other for best thinking. So, yes, and we, as Tom's team, we're the beneficiaries of the information that he receives, and that certainly gets passed on to our officers, our executive committee, and our members.
It sounds to me, and I don't want to, I think this will probably be the last question I ask, but it sounds to me as though in this time of great crisis and great challenge, there is also great opportunity. And Dr. McGrath, I hear optimism in your voice because you're just pounding this stuff out. You're doing the research. You guys are working and coordinating together across the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And I know you personally, and I know how much you value the kids from pre-K right on through graduates. So it sounds to me like there's a great opportunity here that you seem to be nurturing and going after.
I think every conversation we've had with our roundtables, with our new superintendents, with every group, I think, and I also sit in, I'm coaching two people, I sit in on their leadership team meetings, and there's always an agenda item. What are we learning? What could we be doing in an improved manner? What could we be doing differently?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you just one quick example which resonated with me. As you know, way back when, I was a special ed administrator. So we have remote learning going on everywhere. If I had a child that required a hospital placement or had to be confined to home after an operation or for some medically related condition, I supplied a tutor for that child. That tutor may have known the child, may not have known the child. The child would receive up to, 1 hour, 2 hours of instruction per day. We have assistant superintendent seminars, and one of our assistant superintendents in the seminar, when we asked the question, what might we do differently, he said, we can revolutionize home hospital instruction.
Mm-hmm.
I can put together a Zoom platform, and that child can now be Zoomed in to the daily third grade instruction. Now, you may need to still send a tutor to the house to double-check the work and make sure the child understood the instructions, but that child's not missing out on the social, interactive aspects of the teacher presentation and the group work with peers.
So I'm right. There's opportunity there, and I knew you'd come up with something. Finally, Dr. McGrath, the last thing I want to, and it just came to mind. I really thought I was done with the last question, but you talk about being a coach, and I know you you are such a supporter and a mentor to so many different people. Is there anybody, and don't give me any names, but is there anybody who might be a new superintendent across the Commonwealth, across the curriculum here, across the state, who might have just every now and then might just say, this isn't what I signed up for, maybe a rookie or something like that?
It goes beyond that. On the North Shore alone, we will when we start the next academic fiscal year on July 1, there will be a new superintendent in Gloucester, in Hamilton-Wenham,
right,
Peabody,
mm-hmm,
Melrose, Linfield, just to name a few,
mm-hmm,
Marblehead. Though there will be people who are either brand new to the work or new to the district. And I've tried to reach out to each one of those folks and to say, this should be a fabulous time for you. This should be a time of great joy, excitement, and anticipation. I hope there are some people in your life who are saying, atta girl, atta boy, you've stepped to the next level. they know what they've signed up for, because most of those are currently sitting assistant superintendents, and they've been part of the critical team that's been working, you know, 24/7 on behalf of the district they're in, and riding the second horse, meeting with the teams for the district they're going to lead. So they know what they're getting into, and you have to just applaud their commitment to students, commitment to our profession, for taking a leadership role during these very difficult times.
That is Dr. Christine McGrath, Director of Operations for the Massachusetts Association of School Superintendents.
A daily news podcast for the North Shore, North Shore Today. North Shore Sports Night, Monday nights at 7, as we keep you connected with the North Shore.
Well, with his eagle eye on the Merrimack Valley, we welcome back Lawrence Eagle Tribune reporter Bill Kirk. Bill, how you making out?
Oh, pretty good. How's it down? Working from home. It's different, but it's working out.
Yeah, it's different, all right. I know, and I think this is the seventh or eighth week, something like that, we've been doing this. So are you getting into any kind of a rhythm as a reporter in terms of getting your stories and getting your interviews?
Yeah, it works pretty well. You know, people, fortunately, everybody's home, so it's not hard to find people. I mean, with cell phones, it's never that difficult to find people, but everybody's around. They have a little, you know, a little extra time here and there to talk. I'm finding that a lot of city officials or town officials are incredibly busy. There's just so many different things going on as a result of this coronavirus and the response to it. Just the human toll and the human angles on it are just unbelievable. And then they're trying to help businesses. They're trying to help families. They're trying to work out things with the homeless people. They're trying to work out things with the nursing homes. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And these folks are really, really working a lot. I mean, thank God for Zoom meetings. You know, everybody's doing Zoom meetings now, and I'm even covering city council meetings, and they're all on Zoom. So it works pretty well. I think. I mean, it's not the same as being there in person, obviously, nearly as good from a reporting perspective, but at least you're getting the information that you need for stories, and so you can get those stories out to the public.
Yeah, one of the people we talked to, a city councilor, was saying that he was finding, I think it was a Gloucester city councilor, as a matter of fact, I think it was Barry Pett, was finding that, okay, even though we're socially distancing and so on, physically apart, he's found that the community has sort of grown together, at least in his eyes. People have come closer because of the way that you have to connect. And I think it's because he's checking up on people. They're checking in with him every day. So, you know, by phone or by video, there's a lot more of that going on. And I guess you get more used to it as time goes on. You know, Bill, you mentioned something about a business, you know, business owners talking with city officials and so on. And I saw an article in the Eagle Tribune you wrote up in Andover about restaurants. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. That's as we enter into the first phase, I guess they want to call it, of the reopening, because Charlie Baker's being very, you know, as he is, I think, is in his personality, and you know, his policies are generally pretty conservative. He's being taking a very conservative approach to the reopening, and I think because the numbers are still going up in Massachusetts, and I think one of the things they're going to be looking at is how to reopen restaurants, specifically restaurants, bars, because how do you do social distancing in an environment where, you know, restaurants, their business model is built on having a certain number of people in the restaurant, you know, at any given time, getting them in, getting them out, getting them fed, making sure they get, you know, they pay, and so there's a whole you know, as a diner, you, hopefully you don't see it because you're there to get the ambiance and the experience. But these guys, they really count on these numbers. So if you have, you know, 20 tables, you want all 20 tables filled because that's how your business model is. And if they come in, and this is what John Ingalls from Palmer's was saying, that if they come in and they say he can only have, you know, he has to cut his number of tables in half because of social distancing, that's going to be a huge cut. That's a 50% cut to his pay. So the restaurant owners are eagerly awaiting the regulations that are going to come out from the state on how restaurants, and they'll be enforced, I imagine, by the local boards of health. How are they, what are the rules and parameters of reopening going to be? If they cut them in half, that's going to be a huge problem for a lot of these guys. If they make them put up barriers, that changes the whole ambiance of the restaurant. You know, if all the waiters and all the servers are wearing masks. I mean, that's just kind of strange. The menu, even right down to the disposable menus. Everything's going to be got to be disposable now, I guess. I don't know. They don't know. It's a big unknown for these guys right now. And I think it's very, very unsettling for them and their employees who are eager to get back to work and their customers who really want to get back to the restaurants or the pubs or whatever it is, the places that they go and hang out and meet with friends and, you know, have a couple of drinks and have a couple of, you know, have a hamburger or whatever it is. And how is that going to change? You know, that's a huge question, and that's sort of what the story was sort of looking at, was mm-hmm. you know, how these guys are going to adapt in the new world, the new world order, as it were.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we miss the most is going out to dinner, apart from missing our grandchildren in person. But Bill, one thing I didn't realize, well, you're talking about the part of Andover that suffered some economic loss during the gas explosion deal.
That's right. Same cohort, I guess you want to call it. Same group of people. It was that business district that runs along Main Street and some of the adjoining streets, right up to the Lawrence border. That includes, the restaurants down in the plaza there. The Stop and Shop. Well, it used to be Stop and Shop Plaza. Yeah, I mean, McDonald's, I can't remember the name. There's a couple of really good restaurants in that plaza there.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the way up to, you know, Main Street. I think, these guys really took it on the chin, and they're going through it all over again. But this time, it's unclear what's going to come out at the other end. At least in the gas crisis, they knew, okay, they can reopen. They can count on that same income stream. This time, they reopen. They don't know what they're going to get.
My goodness, yeah. You know, on Cape Ann and I guess elsewhere, the beaches have been closed. Not necessarily the beaches have been closed, but the parking lots have been closed, so you can't access the beaches, like at Niles Beach and Good Harbor Beach in Gloucester. What's the situation in the area you're covering?
The Harold Parker State Forest, which is run by the Department of Conservation and Recreation for the state, they're open, but they announced early on in the crisis, the state announced that most of the parking lots for the state parks are going to be closed. So that presents a huge problem, and I think they're closed because primarily they don't have the staff. They don't have the staff to run around and manage these parks right now. So they shut down the parking lots. There are a few parking lots that are open here and there. There's one at Harold Parker that's around the Ranger Station. We ran a photo in the paper on the weekend. It gets so crowded that the cars spill out onto the street. Well, because there's in other parts of the park, there are no parking areas, people were parking all along the road. So the people were concerned. The state police was patrolling it, and they asked the town to actually put up some no parking signs, which I guess helped. I talked to one of the neighbors out there. That actually did cut down on some of the illegal parking. But the police and the public works and even the startup or getting equipment down that road if the roads were blocked with cars. So it became sort of a problem. The other thing is, it's a kind of a good, in my eyes anyway, it's a good problem to have in the sense that people are getting outside, they're enjoying state parks. It's just too bad that the state can't really manage these parks for these kinds of crowds. It would be really nice to, when people are actually using these parks in record numbers, if they could get these, the good experience that you might expect, then maybe they'd come back. And I think that to kind of seize on to say, hey, good experience for these folks. Let's open up these parking lots. Let's put people in the booths there and information and hand out trail maps and tell them to be safe and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think when I went by Good Harbor Beach. Everybody was parked along the road by the bridges, where the bridge is, and they were getting ticketed. And now people, you look on the beach, and people are not close to each other. They're distance, and that's one place, especially at low tide, where you can put a lot of people, and there'll be plenty of social distancing. It would be a good way for people, and everybody's aware of this, and people need to get out and get some air.
Yeah, they really do, and I'm constantly wondering, what did people do before? I mean, I have a dog, so I'm constantly outside with him, walking here and there in different places. So I have my favorite spots, and they're overrun with people.
Yeah,
everybody's out, which I think is great. Don't get me wrong, I love it. I think it's great that people are outside. But what did they do before? Where did they go before with all of this? if you know what I mean, it's just kind of it's interesting.
Yeah,
interesting phenomenon, and I think. Obviously, it's because they're stuck in the house with the kids. They got to get the kids outside, get them off the TV, get them off their screens, which is great. I just wish they were more like if they're ticketing people down there at the beach. That's just awful. I mean, all you're doing is making enemies instead of friends.
I know. Well, some of the stories are difficult that you've been covering, I know, up at the Lawrence Eagle Tribune, and there's a lot of consternation and hand-wringing and depression, if you will, but you also have a great story this week on what's going on at Methuen High School because, obviously the class of 2020 has been gypped out of so many activities, so many senior activities that they look forward to as kids do their entire educational careers. But you got a good story out of, is it Methuen?
Yes, it was Methuen, and they're the Rangers, which is... I think is a good mascot,
advisor.
Yeah, the class advisor. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know.
teacher.
Yeah. Yeah,
the class advisor got together with the head of the boosters, the high school boosters, and they got a bunch of signs and. And people, the high school seniors, could sign up online to get them. And then a group of teachers, coaches, and administrators went around last Saturday and passed out 300 signs, or 309 signs to be specific, to the high school seniors all over Methuen. And they would drive up and get out of the car. Everybody had masks and gloves. So they would all stand out on the street or, far away and put the sign in the front yard and call the kid and they'd come out sometimes with their parents, sometimes, just by themselves. And, they took lots of photos, which we posted online and mm-hmm. in the paper. And, it was a really nice event and the kids, I think, really appreciated it. You could tell by the big smiles on their faces. And the way they did it, which I think was really cool, the class advisor and the booster, they matched up the people who were passing out the signs with the specific students. So the people who showed up were, the lacrosse coach of the kid who played lacrosse.
Yeah, cool, yeah.
Yeah, or the football coach of the kid who played football. And so there were people that they knew, and there was a real connection there. And it just sort of reinforce that connection to these seniors, and just to give them a little something to smile about, and then an otherwise pretty grim situation for them. And the other stories we've done about different what different schools are going to be doing, this is something to look, keep your eye on, is how these different schools are going to do their graduations. Some of them have already decided that they're going to do them remotely, and how they do them remotely is going to be fascinating. Fascinating work in technology and how you use it to its best possible abilities. And the other places they're talking about doing in-person graduations, and how is that going to work with social distancing and masks and gloves and all the rest. So that's going to be very different as well. So it'll be interesting to see how they adapt to this new reality that we're in.
Great story. And I do think that there's one model people might be looking at now. I don't know if you saw it on television, but the governor was at Foxborough yesterday at the stadium at Gillette for the graduation class of the Massachusetts State Police Academy. And did you see how
I heard about it. I did not see it, I was wondering how they did it.
They were spaced out. The entire football field, I think there were 250, 239, something like that, which
right.
is the size of some of our graduation classes. And they had the spacing. And there were nobody in the stands, sadly. But, boy, that would be a place to hold a graduation. But that might be a model for in-person graduations. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be hard to imagine nobody in the stands.
Right.
I would think that they could even do that if
yeah.
they went up and marked out places where
mm-hmm.
you could sit. And if families are staying together and everybody wears masks, and they could, I'm sure they could allow for a certain number. There'd be a lot, and then, but you're right. How do they do? Because usually I think about how Gloucester does it at the high school field there. The kids are all packed in
yeah.
two groups. And to space them out over the whole field would be really unbelievable.
Yeah.
That would be,
well, Bill,
that would I can imagine that happening, but it would be a totally different experience.
We gotta hope for the best for these kids, that's for sure, and for all of us. And Bill, obviously these are historic times. You're writing in a very incredible era, and these articles are gonna be archived by the kids, and they're gonna look back at them many years from now when they have their reunions and so on, and they're gonna say, "Yeah, I was there, and we got through it." Bill, anything you want to mention about upcoming coverage or anything else in the paper?
Not really, but just like I said, keep an eye on these high school graduations. Our graduation season's coming up, and it's going to be fascinating to see how they adapt and then move on.
Yeah. Well, Bill, stay safe. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Rick.
Thank you, Bill. Take care.
You too.
All right. That is Bill Kirk, who is the Eagle Eye on the Merrimack Valley. He is a reporter for the Lawrence Eagle Tribune.
Connections continues with our panel. I'm Bill Newell with Rick Moore and Josh Arnold. And gentlemen, welcome. I'll say hello first to Josh this time. Josh?
Good morning. Nice to be chatting with both of you.
Rick,
we've
already heard from with two feature interviews already on the Connection show today. And Rick, let me mix it up here. Just a quick reaction to the two interviews we just heard on the program. What are your thoughts?
Oh boy, I'm telling you, the emotion, guys, that people are experiencing right now, talking with Bill Kirk. He's doing, obviously, most of his reporting from home, and he has to do everything online or on the telephone. But the angst and the anxiety that business owners are experiencing right now is incredible. And he was, the fact that he was talking with the Andover restaurant owner, and they're waiting for guidelines to open up, it looks like that some of these towns and cities are already, giving out some information from their reopening task force as to how this thing will look. So, the anxiety is just incredible, and you got to feel for people who are suffering right now. And Dr. McGrath, the information that she gives with regard to what the superintendents are doing, she said she's in meetings almost daily, and not almost daily, but almost all day long daily, with superintendents across the state, and how they're dealing with different aspects of this thing you know, on a daily basis as it unfolds. But one interesting note, and Josh, this may be of interest to you as well. As a former special education administrator and teacher, Dr. McGrath was saying that, interestingly enough, the at-home learning, the online learning, remote learning that's going on, has been a real benefit to a certain segment of the special needs kids. And that was a bit of a surprise. She said they're really thriving with this. So, you know, there is some good stuff coming out of all this.
It is a surprise in some respects because of the depth of services that some students need and require. On the other hand, I can see why it becoming more individualized, why it might play out that way. That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, pretty cool.
Rick, you mentioned the economy and businesses, and Josh, you have a note on consumer habits. How have they changed, or what's happening with consumer habits through all of this?
Well, you know, I was looking through some different topics, just how is consumer behavior, you know, what's changed for us? You know, I always like to look at the what is the significance of how, when we come out of this, how will our lives be different? And some of the things seemed obvious, surprised me, but drawing from an article that was in USA Today by Samuel Stebbins in late April, they were drawing from news articles and consumer surveys and so forth, that milk sales were up 47.5%. Gasoline was obviously down. That McDonald's was down. Walmart's was up a bit. But video games saw a change in sales upwards of 65%. Gasoline and puzzles. Change in sales, 370%. And here's one I'm sure will surprise you. Change in sales for beer was up 42%.
Yeah, that's a real surprise.
And then fitness equipment. Are you ready for this? Change in sales was up 535%.
Wow. That's...
Yeah.
Well,
hand sanitizer was up 470%. Television and streaming services went up 20%. Starbucks had a 60 to 70% decline. And here's one that I like. Frozen cookie dough. You ready? Change in sales up 454%.
Yeah, that...
Yeah, make cookies with the kid.
Yeah, well, and firearms were up 80% and freezers to store food were up 500% increase. So I thought that was interesting to just someone took the time to take a snapshot of some key industries, what's up and what's down, and it is going to change how we do things. We've talked about this before on the show and other shows, and that is that you know, the social distancing requirement, and no one's quite sure how that's going to play out, but or how long it's going to need to play out. You know, so I think it's going to change. I mean, it's changing our consumption habits, but it's going to change the kind of services that people provide. How many of you, do you guys go shopping, or do you do use a service now?
Oh, I go in person.
Yep, I go in person.
We've been doing it on an app, and someone delivers it, and you give them a tip.
Let's see, what's the rate of gratuity? How much?
We've been doing 10%. I'm not sure what other people do, but some of them, but they get paid besides the tip for doing the shopping. But, you know, you get a $300 or $400 bill, and then you add a tip onto it. But it's, and we get stuff locally, but we get some stuff from BJ's comes in as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned I was, as you were going through your list, I was thinking, well, I wonder how Netflix is doing, because you got to think those guys have felt a bump. But they already have such wide penetration to begin with. But going up 20%, not a surprise. And the good news for Netflix probably is that everybody stays with it after the pandemic ends guessing.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. And you get into a series and stuff. I was wondering how many people are reading more. I usually have a half a dozen books going at a time, and I'm finding that I'm finishing a lot of books that I've started at different intervals. And I think when it's all done, I'll probably have read 10 or 20 books.
Well, I know someone who works with a publishing go-between, and according to the to the people who are there, and they sort of they do all the data, they do all the computer stuff between the publisher and the seller, like Amazon. They go from publisher to Amazon, and that company is not they're not noticing an uptick in purchasing books.
Really?
Yeah, that's a surprise to me too. Yeah.
Well, I guess but the people also have the Kindles or whatever the other.
That's what I'm saying. It's online stuff, like you buy from Amazon to Kindle ebooks and stuff, and they're not noticing an increase in sales.
All right.
Well, yeah. In what I'm reading is stuff from my home library, which. You probably would have guessed is fairly extensive anyway. But
well, you're not helping out the Amazon folks there, Josh.
No. I'm probably their competition for some.
Well, maybe you could get a magazine or a book sent to you from Stop and Shop or wherever. You know, that'd be a way to.
That would be great.
Listen, you bring up some good points, Josh, and I will admit that. I'm one of those who has contributed to the uptick in beer sales. Tim Kearns and I did a beer pod, which we have to publish. We are having a beer with a meal, or at least I am, almost on a daily basis. So I'm in that category. Bill, are you in any of those categories contributing to the increase?
I am not. No, I am not.
Not in any of them.
No, I'm not. Well, I don't know. I mean, let me think here. We already had Netflix.
Hand sanitizer than we ever have.
You know, I haven't been able to find hand sanitizer. I went online one day to buy it, and it was they were gouging the price online, so I did not buy any. But you know, I've always had some in my car, and my wife ended up getting a couple of bottles or something or other small things that she had, and we pulled it out. So I haven't gone through it yet. I mean, I'm hoping that I can just get through it until we come up to. Till this thing kind of winds down a bit, and then hand sanitizer will be everywhere, you know.
Well, you know about the place in Gloucester that has the distillery that's making sanitizer, right?
Yeah, $30 a bottle, and it comes in a vodka bottle.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, I would think some people could get confused after you know.
That occurred to me, too, when I saw it sitting on the counter.
I mean, sanitizer and vodka, I mean, by... Just from looking at it, I mean, that'd be hard to discern the difference, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, but maybe, you know, one would clean your insides out, the other not so much, so, you know.
Yeah, that's what Trump was talking about. There you go, yeah.
Okay. No, I've seen it. One of the restaurants actually purchased hand sanitizer from the distillery, and it's quite, believe me, it's quite clearly marked. You're not going to make a mistake on that. They've made it very safe.
Have you noticed, I see on Facebook that what people are posting, and they're posting what they just cooked up, and it's amazing. I mean, a woman that used to work for me is in the school department. I told her she could open a bakery. It's just absolutely phenomenal stuff, and all I could think of was, gee, you know, if you put all these people together... What a buffet. It would be a buffet that never ended.
You know, I think that's what Facebook was all about before, wasn't it? I mean, it was all about people posting, hey, I'm out at such and such, and look what I have in front of me, what I ordered, and here's my dinner, and I'm enjoying the sunset here, you know, with the scenic views and so on. And that's what Facebook was about for a while. I think people got away from that, I'm thinking. But, hey, another one last thing is golf. I mean, golf... They made the announcement yesterday, and golf courses, some of them, opened up right away. They didn't need 48 hours or a week to ramp up their golf courses. They were ready to go.
Well, if you see Gary Larrabee's column in the Salem News today, I think he was out there minutes after it happened. So, yeah, they're at it, and they've been ready to go.
Well, yeah, and that's a recreational pursuit that you, by nature, are going to keep social distancing anyway. You know, you're not on top of each other. It's not like, I mean, even though in the big tournaments it's, it becomes a spectator sport, but just out on Bass Rocks Golf Course or any of the local courses, you know, your foursomes are plenty far away, and that's not going to be an issue for folks. One of the things that I saw going back to that article was that yeast cakes initially were disappearing from all the stores. That the sales in yeast cakes went up significantly because more people are baking their own bread.
Exactly. The other thing, just back to golf as a final thought here. If I'm thinking, the only problem with golf would be, you know, after you putt and your ball goes into the cup, you have to reach down and get it. But should you just fill that cup with sanitizer? I'm thinking that would be that. I mean, that should be in the guidelines. Fill all the cups up with sanitizer.
So that's assuming that the ball goes in the cup, that you get it in there. But
yeah, it'll get in there.
I remember doing a golf tournament for the Chamber with Brian Todd, and there was a contest for who could get it to the closest to the pin on one of the, I think it was the 16th, and I had like the drive of a lifetime, it landed 18 feet from the pin off the drive. Problem was, it was on the wrong green. instead of driving from the 16th tee, I put it 18 feet from the hole, from the pin, on the 18th green, which didn't help us.
All right, men, there you go. That's Josh Arnold along with Rick Moore. I'm Bill Newell. Thanks so much for joining us on Connections. Don't forget, Connections is now every day just about 10 a.m. here on MSO News Sports, and we feature some of the we try to connect you with North Shore newsmakers and people doing all kinds of great things on the North Shore. So do check out Connections again every day, Monday through Friday, again about 10 a.m. right here on MSO News Sports. MSO News Sports is a unique multimedia website providing exclusive news and sports content for the North Shore. Our goal is to keep you connected to your local neighbors throughout Essex County and beyond. We feature the best of the North Shore, and we couldn't provide this service without the powerful support of our local sponsors. Like Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury, the Bradford Tavern in Rowley. Just like us, they care about the North Shore. Check out all of our podcasts and share our website with your friends. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. Again, we are your connection to the best of the North Shore. msonewsports.com.